All right, the coach is in. We are your hosts, Kat and Irene.
I'm Irene. I moved to the U.S. on my own 10 years. I have a background in management engineering, earned my master's degree from Columbia, and secured my permanent residence through work. I spent my career in real estate and am now a certified coach and accredited with IDEA.
And I'm Kat. My parents came to the States from the Philippines in the 1960s and landed in Milwaukee, where I was born. I now live in Chicago with my two daughters and husband. I've always been multi-passionate and multi-hyphenate, and presently I serve others as an attorney, podcaster, and in the personal development space as a retreat host and as a certified coach as well.
Join us as we share our stories and hear from business leaders, generational pioneers, and experts as we discuss the personal, relational, and professional challenges we, immigrants, and children of immigrants, face.
Irene, I'm so excited to be chatting with you. We haven't connected in a while, so I'm guessing that we each have lots of ground to cover when it comes to things to talk about.
Yeah, I know, right? I don't know how much you're willing to share, but I'll start. Since the last time we saw each other, there's a lot that's been going on. I got married. So our families were here. My husband's mom actually also got her kidney transplant.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I haven't told you that. It all good things, right?
Oh, is she doing okay?
She's doing great, actually. She's getting stronger now. She can walk. So yeah, we're very happy that this actually happened in the span of a week. Like, we had the tea ceremony, and then within that week, she got her kidney transplant. So she wasn't able to attend the wedding, but you know, we're looking forward to like what's next to come, because now that she's able to travel, we'll see where that takes us.
Oh my gosh, that's great. I didn't realize that she was not, you know, in 100% health. And so, like you said, getting a new lease on something from a health perspective, that has to feel good. And I'm glad to hear she's healing and recovering well.
Yeah. What about you, Kat? What have you been up to?
So you may have heard the term Maysember bounced around when it comes to families with kids in school, because May feels a lot like December, where there's like party, banquet, end of year, like gifts galore for, you know, it all kicks off with Teacher Appreciation Week. And then at my girl's school, they had like a junior high formal at the beginning of the month. And then one of my daughters graduated and had her confirmation. And my other daughter's super involved in dance. So there's end of year competitions and recitals and showcases. And so it feels like, you know, like the end of a calendar year, where you're racing to get in all sorts of fun, sometimes stressful. But ultimately, you know, you finish off the month or feeling like, wow, that was a lot. And I'm kind of proud of myself for making it through without any huge arguments or blowouts or breakdowns.
It seems like, you know, sometimes life takes over us, right?
Yes, yes. I feel like, you know, I may have touched on this in the past, but before you get to this stage of parenting, your schedule can kind of feel like the only things that jump in are holidays or the seasons. You know, like there's proof of change, but like when my kids were in daycare, they just went to daycare every day from, you know, 8 a.m. till 5 p.m. and that was year round. But when they started school and started their own activities and getting into things that pull them in different directions, it like the schedule kind of takes on a life of its own. So it can be hard, or I know it was hard for me to adjust to thinking, like to recalibrating my expectations for myself during this time. Because I think I kind of didn't anticipate or wasn't willing to initially accept that this is just how it has to be. There's only so many hours in the day. I only have so much energy, and in order for me to show up the way I want to for my family, which is one of my core values, you know, as being like an exceptional parent and an exceptional partner, I need to let certain other things take the back burner so that I can be there for these people in this way. And it's taken me years to kind of come around to that realization and that place of acceptance, because I think for a long time I thought, oh, if I just hustle harder, or if I sleep less, or if I, you know, divvy up the schedule in a certain way and multitask, then I'll be able to still do everything at the same level, even though these areas are extra demanding in May. It's played out like that, where, you know, my fitness routine has taken a break, I'm not cooking as much, or I'm not cleaning at the same level as I do, when, you know, these things aren't coming up.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's been my day.
Yeah. And what a process that must have been for you to get to that point of like just self-acceptance and realization, right? Because we truly never really know what's in it for us, like as you enter like different stages in life, and which is, I think, why it's important also to be talking about these things. And thank you for sharing, because I'm pretty sure our listeners would appreciate having someone share their firsthand experience. You know, like for someone like me who just got married and who might see myself in your position in the future, it would help to like hear someone's experience firsthand.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Yeah. It reminds me of when I had a newborn and feeling so frustrated and at moments alone, and having a positive attitude, knowing that this was a blessing, but also feeling incredibly inept and like, no one gives you a manual for this, and having at that point in time, eventually, a number of new moms are like, it's going to suck. Like, you're going to second guess whether or not you should have had kids, or you're going to feel like you're a terrible mom. And all of this is just part of it. It doesn't mean that it's true. These are your feelings. They come and go. You're sleep deprived. Having a kid is a totally different experience than anything you've ever learned and mastered and executed against in your professional life, or your previous personal life. So yeah, to your point about hearing how other people have, navigated and had the same feelings, for sure, can be so helpful. So yes, I'm happy to word vomit as needed.
Yeah. And, you know, for our audience, like listening into our podcast, I think the value that you might take away from this is the intersectionality of the experiences that Kat and I bring to the table. We're both, I'm an immigrant from the Philippines, and Kat is a children of immigrant, and we're at different life stages. So we have different perspectives to offer for the topics that that might come up in conversation. And I don't know about you, Kat, but me personally, I've become more open and candid about like my own experiences and like my identity, because I'm an expert in my own experience. And I you know.
Yes. Yes. On that note, I feel like we have not had a deep dive into like the emotional transformation that weddings can carry with them. I loved, so obviously the listeners can't see this, but Irene had like an engagement video and then a post-wedding video that they captured so many beautiful moments from those times your relationship. And it's fun to have that glimpse into your world. And I'm curious the emotions behind it and, you know, what came up for you as you were, you know, in the throes of this life changing event.
Where do I even begin?
Yeah.
Because I mean, to get to the point of the wedding, like, you know, I could start with like how the relationship started also, but I think the videos will showcase certain glimpses of the day itself and our relationship as a couple. What it did not show was the chaos behind all of it, because it was chaotic. But all that to say, it was still the best day of my life ever, because I got to spend it with the people that mean so much to us, right? It was a very small wedding. And these are the people that I've known over the years. The ceremony itself was I don't know, like I had to prepare myself because even though these are the people that we already are close to us, I was not, there was nothing that could have prepared me for that moment. Like I did not expect to feel the way that I did as the doors were opening and everyone would see me and my dad and, you know, see me in my dress and my dad walking beside me. My husband now almost teared up during the exchange of vows, you know, like these are things that you normally, I did not know that you would cry. Like I wasn't expecting this vow to turn out the way that it did. It almost also made me cry.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love what you said too about that, you know, the videos don't show the chaos that was behind the scenes. And you also said it was the happiest day or most beautiful day of your life. So just being able to recognize that the happiest and most beautiful moments don't have to be picture perfect and not chaotic. Like that can coexist. Like the chaos can be the best thing ever. There's just something resonated when you said that, like, oh, that's amazing. Like people think it has to be calm and seamless and perfect, and actually not necessarily. No.
And I think, you know, like it would not have been that way without the chaos, because I think why I'm saying it's the best day of my life despite the chaos is because I think the people who showed up for us, I felt the love and the care of everyone who showed up. Like, you know, like can you imagine the patience that everyone had to go through, and like just the bridal party really like put things together. And like I'm so grateful that to have these people in our lives and to be there for our wedding day. And that's what my husband said too. Like, we are so lucky and grateful that our bridal party are who they are, because they really pulled things together. So, you know, and I don't think everyone has the same experience. So it truly was the best day ever.
It sounds like you were able to see their love in action for you. Like, you know, they came together and all of them, like, what do they say? Like weddings and funerals, those are the times when people are together. And how, what a gift to be able to see all those people that you love in one place, not just, you know, being there, but also kind of acting in concert to help make this an amazing experience for you.
Yeah. And I mean, Kat, I mean, so the wedding day itself, I started thinking like, oh, sometimes I have a hard time receiving help and receiving love from people, that it was almost overwhelming to see how much love the bridal party gave. It's like, oh my God, like is it that I'm unwilling to recognize that these people love me and will be there for me? Because then not to sound morbid, as you mentioned, like funerals also, I started thinking like, oh, these are the people who I probably would show up to their funerals to. I don't know if the grammar made sense there, but we're beyond that.
Wow. This is a side note. In early April, or you know, but you may I remember mentioning to you that there were some deaths in my family. Like my uncle passed, and a close family friend passed away. But you're mentioning about funerals and the people you love, and just reminded me of how I am not someone. I feel almost still new to funerals. This may sound weird because I'm almost, you know, I'm in my late 40s, but my dad never liked talking about death. And when we were growing up, he actually wouldn't take us to many funerals of like family members, et cetera. I think partly out of superstition. He's of Chinese descent. And even now, like as we plan for the eventualities of death and, you know, him passing on, we don't have conversations easily. He's very reluctant, but all this to say that because of my lack of experience, I always thought until relatively recently that funerals, you had to kind of earn the right to attend a funeral, that you had to be close to the person who died. And so there were times when I like avoided funerals or just sent flowers or whatever, because that was the refrain in my head was I would feel like a poser going to this funeral because I actually didn't know the person who died that well. But in recent months, it's kind of shifted to funerals being for the living. Sorry, I'm getting all teared up. But it's, you're there to support the people you love that are still with us. And yes, it's like the reason that you're coming together is because of the people who've passed and to honor them. But it's not just about that. It's also about paying your respects and showing your support and showing, like, taking action to support that person's loved ones who you love as well.
Mm. And there goes the complexity of life, right? Because like when we think about death, it's obviously very, very, we're grieving. It's like a huge emotion to unpack. But at the same time, we're also celebrating someone's life and the good parts of it and the memories that, you know, we shared together. And like it's a lot to it's a lot of like intense emotions all at once.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot. Yeah. And I can just imagine at that when you were walking down the aisle and seeing all those people looking at you with such love in their faces and joy, that yeah, there can be this crazy mashup of emotions, thinking to yourself at the same time, like, yeah, these are people that if I lose them, I will be absolutely heartbroken. And there's such beauty in that dynamic, in the knowing of like what preciousness that you have in your hands, and kind of the reminder to cherish it for what it is. Because you know, if you lose it, how hurt you would be. Like there's it, like you said, it's that the layers and the intertwinedness of love and loss.
Yeah. And how lucky we are to actually meet these people, because like, you know, when it comes to friends, these are your chosen family, right? You could choose to not be part of this relationship if you didn't want to, but something about this person and this relationship draws you to them to make you want to show up despite the distance, despite, you know, different life stages. So it's a conscious choice to want to be in this relationship and to nurture the relationship. And yeah. And so like, you know, at this age that we're in, it's like when we invest in relationships, it's kind of already long term, right? Because we know who we are and we know who we want to invest our time in. And so that's why I thought like, oh, these are the people that I choose to be lifelong friends with. Because mm-hmm. I think one of the conversations we spent the night with the bridal party, and we had really deep conversations, because I think they were saying like, oh, you know, when you get married, like you never have to go through life alone anymore, right? Like to deal with life's adversities. And I said, I'd like to think that friends are part of that too, that no one gets left behind, right? Because that's the community that you build. And what better way to live life than to do it with the people that you love the most, right? And so, yeah. You know, when I think about funerals, it's very complex, and there's obviously the grief part of it, but also like recognizing that how lucky am I to have met these people and to have shared and created memories with them. And so that's where my head's at.
Oh, I can just see the gratitude and the, like how grateful you are for those people and the moments you shared together.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the listeners, Irene is just beaming. She's got this perma-grin. If we're ever on YouTube someday, you'll be able to see. But for now, just take my word for it. Yeah. Oh, well, I'm so thrilled that you have that memory in your archive now. And yeah, what a beautiful launching pad into your marriage. Gosh.
Yeah. So yesterday I was invited as a guest speaker to my CrossFit's bar talk. And one of the things that we talked about was self-care. And I was asked like, how exactly do you take care of yourself? Right. Cause like it comes down to your belief in your self-worth and whether you are deserving. Because like, you know, like you mentioned earlier, like you can be drawn to different places. Your identity as a mom, as a partner, as a daughter, it could pull you in different directions, and you sometimes put yourself last. Mm-hmm. How do you prioritize yourself and your self-care? And I think the bottom line of that was find a support system that will keep reminding you you are worthy, and you are mm-hmm. you know, worthy of prioritizing yourself, because it could be hard for us to reframe that thought in our head alone.
That's good. That is very good. I could not agree with that more. And I think accountability, or I don't even know if that system, support system, always is labeled accountability, but there's an element of that, like to remind you of who you are and what you deserve and what you want to prioritize and what you value. Like I think oftentimes we think of accountability as like a taskmaster or, you know, a drill sergeant. But I think those support systems can offer you a sense of almost gentle accountability, in that just by virtue of, yeah, reminding you that this is who you are and what you want to prioritize. And we're going to help you get there, whether it's slow, whether it's fast, whether there's no action for a while, or whether you want to take intense action for a really, you know, short period of time. Like there are people who get you and support you through it.
And there's no right or wrong answer to it, right? Because I think I'm not sure if this is specific to millennials, but it seems like every millennial I speak to seems to have this drive of like, oh, I'm just going to be robotic and I will push myself to the max without realizing that you cannot sustain that way of living. And I think now we're realizing that. And it's so funny and ironic how self-care and like doing nothing, it's like we have to carve time to do nothing.
Right. Yeah. And I know you speak for millennials. I would say, because I'm technically Gen X, and I think we are saddled with similar thought patterns. Like you work to get some sort of life it's really complex. And I remember someone advising me, which I thought was good advice at the time, but I did not consistently implement it. And maybe there's a reason why that I should unpack for a future podcast episode. But they were saying, you know, schedule 15 minutes of like do nothing time, because it doesn't come naturally to you, that you need to actually, like, if you are someone that's hardwired to do and adhere to a schedule, like you should block in time for nothingness, for whateverness, and put down the phone and get away from the screen, and don't feel necessarily obliged to walk, but just let yourself kind of be, like, whatever stillness you can obtain to schedule it. There's a lot of wisdom to that, but just underscoring your point that self-care is hard for people to prioritize, I think, in our culture generally. Like, I think self-care and stillness just isn't something we do well as Westerners. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think this line of thought brings me back to what my therapist shared with me between the difference goal-based living and value-based living, because this might be a new way of thinking that that our parents never taught us, and like we're just now being introduced to. We're in goal-based living is like, oh, you know, we're just working towards one goal after another. Because I remember that I was this way, like when I was in the Philippines, I got accepted into schools and I told my mentors about it. And the next thing that I was talking about was like, what's next? And my mentor said, don't forget to celebrate the milestone or the achievement that you just received, like you got into an Ivy League school. And I didn't think much of it, but now it's like, yeah, when do the goals ever end? Because otherwise I'll just be living my life pursuing one goal after another. Whereas value-based living, you're not so much focused on what the goal is, but you're just living out your values, kind of like developing habits and seeing where that takes you, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what I want to point out here is that living in the way that you're just chasing goals, are you actually happy, right? Because there's an undercurrent state of being. Sometimes we push ourselves too much to the point where, oh, we don't realize we're unhappy and we don't really want this anymore.
Yeah, that's such an important distinction, the goals versus values. It reminds me of a phrase that, like, the six words that can change your life, but you have to love the process. You have to love the journey. If you don't, then, as you were saying, you can get caught up in aiming so hard for a destination and not really thinking about, is this what I really want? Or once you get there, realizing that if you're loving the journey, then it's all about, like, that is the value in it. That's the goal. That's like, it becomes less about the destination and more about the process of living and living in a way that makes sense to you.
Yeah, because life is meant to be experienced and not to be woo-woo about this or not. This is also not to say that just because you are living happy and accepting yourself for who you are, that doesn't mean that you're not actually growing and pursuing your goals either, right? Mm-hmm. There's a difference between just focusing on, like, the goals without regard for your well-being and your sense of self-worth and self-acceptance. I think this is what what has become different for me since becoming a life coach, in that, like, I work on self-acceptance and being happy because then I could propel myself into working on my goals and achieving them from a place of worthiness and acceptance, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to, like, I don't feel good enough, so I'm just gonna keep on chasing after that goal until I feel good enough. That's a lie, because I never will. There will always be another goal that I will work towards, right?
Yeah. Yes, so true. There's always something next, like something else that that comes after the goal you accomplish. That once you accomplish one, suddenly there's another one. So you're always feeling less than. You're always feeling incomplete. And I love the when you live by your values. I love that it really you can have this sense of accomplishment, no matter, and fullness and enoughness, regardless of, you know, can you check this box? Do you have this degree? Is there this number on your scale, or is there this number in your bank account? It's instead about kind of those states of being, and do those align with what you value and what you love? Yeah, I love that. I think that's what got me to a peaceful place with parenting too, is recognizing that, of course, it's not all unicorns and rainbows. Like, there's definitely arguments and annoyances and sucky moments and backsliding. Like, I thought I had taught you already that you're not supposed to do X. But, you know, it's all part of this journey. And instead of being focused on, like, I have a kid that is this, it's like, I have a kid, you know, that values this, that learns from mistakes, that is constantly growing. And that feels good. Like, it feels good to know that within the process, there are ups and downs. And because the process is what you enjoy and what you love, and that's what's aligned with your values, the journey is the point of it all. It makes it a lot easier to reach that place of acceptance. Like, this is all part of it. Like, it doesn't matter if my kid didn't do their laundry when they said they were supposed to, or didn't fold it and put it away like I told them to, or, you know, didn't get the A's that I know she wanted, like, whatever it might be. It's like, did you learn? Are you enjoying kind of discovering new information? Are you growing, like, big picture view? You know, are you more consistently able to, like, do the things that you say you want to do? Like, it's a perspective shift for sure, but totally liberating when you tack it not to the goal, but to the values and kind of the journey of getting to be the person you want to be.
I love that. It's very interesting again, right? Our different life stages and our perspectives, because you are talking about it from the perspective of the parent, and I'm talking about this from the perspective of the daughter. Because like, what I wanted to add to that was that I wish my parents worked less as parents and trust that the values that they wanted to impart in me are values that I have received just by watching them live, right? Because they model it. You don't have to say it over and over again, because I will naturally learn the values that matter to you the most just by living with you.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like this could be a totally, we should pick this up yes. in our next discussion, but like the idea of communication and modeling and how both of them coexist and how we picked up different things growing up and how we are choosing to maybe operate differently or maybe in some cases the same as what we witnessed as when we were kids. There's a lot there. I'm sure every immigrant child or child of immigrants can relate.
Absolutely. And I think we've covered a lot of ground today. So I'm curious now from the audience, let us know what kind of topics you're interested in, because there's a lot that Kat and I can unpack and, you know, talk about. We'd be interested in your inputs. So leave us comments in the comment section below.
Sounds good. Yes. And Irene, I think you should also paste a link in the show notes to your wedding video. Selfishly, I'm like,
I will do that. I will certainly do that after the call.
All right. Thanks, everyone. And we will be back soon.
As you wrap up today's session, we invite you to reflect on what resonated with you in today's episode. If you're interested in exploring the topic as it relates to your own personal experience, head to the show notes and visit www.thecoachesinpodcast.com. That's www.thecoachisinpodcast.com. Get ready to break personal, cultural, or generational barriers that get in the way of being the best version of yourself and living the best version of your life.